You're being custom fit for the Suit Up Podcast, tailored by the Best Dressed Podcast Network and XavierPope.com.
Yeah, yo. Yeah, yo. Moolala. Yeah, yo.
Welcome back to Suit Up. With the best dressed man in radio, yours truly, Xavier Pope, where sports is a business. Let's talk about it here on the Best Dressed Podcast Network, XavierPope.com. Follow us on iTunes and SoundCloud and XavierPope.com. I am joined by a guy who is so colorful on Twitter, really rides really hard for the players to make sure that their rights are protected. He is the assistant executive director for external relations for the National Football League's Players Association, the arm that protects and governs the rights of players, the union for players, the National Football League, George Atala. Thank you for joining the Best Dressed Man in Radio, Xavier Pope. George, well, good morning to you.
Morning to you, too. I appreciate being on the show, and hopefully by the end of this, I can take the crown of best sounding man on radio, because I know the best dressed one is your title.
So. you bet it is.
Yeah.
You bet it is. Hey, thank you so much for joining me. I really, really wanted to talk about a lot of the different things that involve the players, obviously. Let's start with Deflategate. I know we've beat this thing to the ground, but I wanted to kind of go over this. I think that the NFLPA has to be flipping right now, has to be ecstatic that the general public, so many different journalists out there, some really prominent ones who, when I would come on television and talk about why the NFLPA should pursue defending Tom Brady in a matter of this course, is, hey, Tom Brady needs to give it up. One of the title articles on a major website was, give it up, Tom, and give it up, give it up, give it up. And then the actual legal case comes out, and the arguments just made sense when it came down to it by Judge Richard and Berman. What say you about those who essentially wanted Tom Brady to give this all up and being vindicated at the end?
Well, I think it proved that the merits of our case were strong, and most people were looking at the case and focusing more on the high general judicial standard for overturning arbitrations as opposed to the actual specific merits of Brady's case itself. And I think that was something that, you know, some of these so-called legal experts got hung up on. And, you know, they were wrong. Obviously, we still have an appeals process to go through that'll start sometime in mid-February. But, you know, we feel like Judge Berman's decision really gave Tom credibility and gave the collective bargaining agreement
yep.
credibility. I mean, look, it's no secret that we don't like parts of the CBA related to the personal conduct policy. But at the same time, we have to proceed with every case to protect the collective bargaining agreement, even if we don't like it. And I think that's what the biggest takeaway for me was from this whole process was really focusing on protecting not only the rights of Tom Brady, but protecting the CBA.
Right. I think those are great arguments. The law of shop was brought up, and I talked about this yesterday for an interview, and I stated that I compare the law of shop to sci-fi movies. I love sci-fi movies. And if you have a certain set of rules that you set up, and you can go hyperdrive, say, a certain miles per hour, and then you move outside of that, and you ever watch one of those movies, you go, wait a minute, that doesn't line up with what the rules that were yep. set up in this movie. This is wrong. And I think that that's really what was the crux of the case is you guys, a lot of fans, a lot of legal analysts talked about Roger Goodell overstepping his authority in handling the matter and handling the appeal, but essentially it was about the strengthening of the CBA no matter how it was set up. What say you? We're in the middle of the CBA. It seems as
yep.
if every big sports case is winding up in the court system. Is that basically a new form of negotiating maybe some of the gray areas of the collective bargaining agreement as maybe the NFL sees it? And does this help the NFLPA in far as when the CBA ends, maybe getting some of these matters addressed in a new collective bargaining agreement?
Well, I think anytime we have a collective bargaining agreement that's signed, as we have from 2011, the tendency for people is to think that that agreement can't change. And I think that that's a misperception that's out there on a number of different issues, when the reality, frankly, is that we have had a lot of things that have changed since 2011. The most prominent and largest part of that collective bargaining agreement that's changed and has evolved are the drug policies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had drug policies that were in place through 2011. We took time to negotiate new ones that were signed in August or September of 2014. And that, you know, really kind of illustrates how we view collective bargaining as an ongoing process. There are going to be things that come up over the next few months that I know the owners are taking a look at. You know, I happen to be doing the show on the day when NFL owners are meeting in New York to talk about various things that impact players. Things like expanded playoffs, a team in Los Angeles, expanding the footprint internationally to places beyond London. You know, what does the union have to say about that, I think, is something we are going to certainly review on all of those issues. But frankly, more importantly, is what does the collective bargaining agreement say about those issues, and do we have to change it? So, you know, I think it's a mistake to look at the CBA as a stone, inflexible document, and we certainly will look at ways continuously to improve it.
Once again, we're talking to George Atala. He is the Assistant Executive Director of External Affairs for the National Football League's Players Association, the union arm that protects and advocates for the players of the National Football League. You talked about some of the changes in the collective bargaining agreement, one of them being the change in the drug policy. It was a big deal, and the NFLPA was highly involved in that, obviously. But what about the change in the personal conduct policy, the alleged unilateral change in the grievance that's currently filed by the NFLPA? Where is the status of that? Because we haven't heard a lot of that in the last few months. And it's a pretty big deal, obviously, with the attention of off-the-field issues with players. Where are we with that grievance, and what is the status of the NFLPA as it relates to any changes in the personal conduct policy moving forward?
Well, I think we'd much rather have a situation where we negotiated with the league on a new personal conduct policy that was tough, fair, and also transparent for everyone in the league. And I think we're at the point now where, you know, we kind of wait for these big decisions to shape or frame the way that we proceed. We certainly don't want to be in a world where we constantly have to file grievances and file court cases to challenge certain things that we think are inconsistent, not only with the existing CBA, but with, you know, frankly, basic legal standards of due process and fairness. And, you know, on the specifics of that, again, the only thing I can really get into too much detail about are that we really want to resolve those issues through negotiations. We want to have an outcome that's better than the system that we have now. And until the owners really take a look at making significant changes, then I don't think we're going to have anything. I mean, frankly, the ball's in their court at this point. So we're either going to continue to have decisions that go one way or the other, or we're going to sit down and negotiate new policies that are better than what we have now.
George, I wanted to talk also about where the NFLPA is, NFLPA Inc., and being able to create avenues for players to make money and being involved in certain games. And we've seen an expansion of that in the last few years. Now, with the NFL moving overseas and expansion of games and different revenue models, even with fantasy football, we talked about that earlier on the show with a sports contributor for Forbes. How does the NFLPA maximize the amount of revenue that its members can make and some of the different things that are happening off the field that are evolving in the game?
Yeah, that's a great question, and we have an entire wholly owned subsidiary here at the NFL Players Association that's dedicated to generating revenues, both that support the union's goals and operations, but also to provide players with additional revenue from group licensing rights. NFL Players Incorporated is the for-profit marketing and licensing arm here at the NFLPA. There's a dedicated staff of 40 or 50 individuals down there who are consistently looking for ways to market and promote the collective brand of players, if you will. And those things manifest themselves in ways like the EA Sports Madden game, but also in other ways as well. And, we're out there actively looking for ways to do that. We're happy that that business is growing. And frankly, it all ties together, I think, from the ability of players to have their own unique presence now. And I think social media has contributed to that big, big way. So we try to leverage that as much as possible.
Once again, we're joined by George Atala. He is the Assistant Executive Director of External Affairs for the National Football League's Players Association. Last question for you, George, is a personal one. You grew up in Lebanon as a child. Have a bachelor's degree in English and another in philosophy. And interesting enough, a lot of the advice that we were told as lawyers to prepare us for law school is to have a philosophy degree. So how – and I see that you have a very keen way of looking at some of the issues that happen with the league. How has philosophy helped you in maybe how you approach some of the issues that happen and come across your desk as far as dealing with the National Football League's Players Association?
Well, I think it certainly provides me with a certain perspective on the issues. Certainly, I think in my role in helping shape our public position on high-profile issues, it's easy to get dragged into the tweet-by-tweet analysis. You know, it's not even a 24-hour news cycle, frankly, anymore. It's more of a, oh, my gosh, this person tweeted this about us. You know, how do you respond? It helps create a guide for me, I think, to look at the big picture, look at the goals that we're trying to accomplish long term, and really take a step back from the day-to-day. I think it's a far more, to be literal, philosophical approach to this, but I also think you revert back to guiding principles as opposed to episodes. And I think that's how I try to approach the job, and having the degree that I got in studying all that stuff really helped.
Oh, I just thought about this, George. I have to add this question. We talked to Lawrence Taylor, Hall of Fame, player for the Giants, widely considered the best defensive player of all time. And we asked him about the union.
No, I didn't have a really strong relationship with the union. I mean, the union wasn't as strong and it wasn't as big as it is today. I mean, right now the union, really fights for players' rights and
we said, okay, how is your relationship with the union? And he spoke about the union protecting the players much more than his previous generation, than previous leaders of the National Football League's Players Association. How has that evolved in your eyes, and how do you see the NFLPA continuing to advocate for its players in the future?
Well, we've really taken a very proactive approach to this. And starting with the 2011 collective bargaining agreement, I think there were certain benefits and provisions in there that really revolutionized the way that we took care of former players. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. There were almost $1 billion in new benefits that not just carried over from from historical deals, but new benefits that were generated from the 2011 CBA. We continue to add services to help players. The Trust is a great example of an institution now that's out there actively serving former players to the tune of about $20 to $25 million a year in funding. And so, you know, those are the ways that I think we stand proud in the accomplishments in service to former players. And, you know, the list really, really goes on and on in terms of how we do that. Now, obviously, no program or service is going to be perfect, and there are always things that we can improve on. But certainly, that's been a major, major focus for us over the last few years. And, you know, little known fact, we probably have the largest number of staff here at the NFLPA dedicated to former player services when you count the Trust.
Wow. Well, once again, this is George Atala. He's Assistant Executive Director of the NFLPA, External Affairs. Just really great conversation digging into these issues, and I think that fans and journalists and legal analysts alike should definitely listen to this podcast and understand a little bit more about the NFLPA and its role with the National Football League and how it is protecting its players. Thank you for joining the Best Dressed Man in Radio. Yours truly, Xavier Pope George. I look forward to talking to you again in the future, my man.
All right, look forward to it, and thanks for having me on.
You're being custom fit for the Suit Up Podcast, tailored by the Best Dressed Podcast Network and XavierPope.com.